Good evening. I'm squaring away some things with Mike. He had a little piece of advice for me. He said, be bold, be brief, and be gone. So thank you for that. I appreciate the encouragement. And don't let the door hit you on the way out, Mike. I'm kidding. I am not Dr. Grimacki, and I know everybody, I think you've been studying through the book of Hebrews, is that right? Well, we're not doing that tonight, so we're going to go a little bit different direction, and for just a few minutes here, and we're going to talk about something that really is, it's. I think we're all challenged with. I'm watching my son, who's going to turn the ripe old age of 23 this week. I'm watching him go through this. I watched him go through it as he was probably a 10-year-old. I've watched a lot of folks go through it. I have personally gone through it. And my guess is just about everybody sitting here, if you're very honest, have gone through this very same thing. And so we're going to talk tonight about living an uncompromising life. So I've got a couple of questions. Anybody know what the three-fifths, I was a history major in college, history and political science, the three-fifths compromise, what was it? Yep, they said that's exactly right. For representation, a slave would count as three-fifths of a person. Anybody know what the Missouri Compromise was? Yeah, there was an agreement passed that really prohibited slave owning in the Louisiana Territory, way south, except for Missouri. They got a pass. It was the Missouri Compromise. There's been a lot of famous compromises. I think it's only fitting. I don't know if you guys know, but there's a pretty important election coming up November 8th. I don't know if you're aware of, there's a couple of candidates for president. There's actually four. I count two as serious. I'm not sure which ones. But if you have nothing else to do tomorrow night, I would encourage you to watch. I think there's a little thing called a debate tomorrow night. And that should be good. I was reminded of that because I heard Mike start coughing and I thought of Hillary Clinton. And that's nothing against her. I just thought about it. It just, she crossed my mind. But you know, in 1988, Vice President Bush was running and he made a very famous statement as he ran for president. No new taxes. Read my lips. No new taxes. And then in 1990, the Tax Reform Act passed. And what did he have to do? Compromise. Well, that got him booted out of office. Martin Luther at the Diet of Worms, he was told, recant your faith. And he said no. And he was excommunicated. And our society seems to be very committed to compromise. I have worked with a lot of people over the years, and I have found myself in situations where you're faced with, are you going to compromise anything? Your standards. There's been a compromise of the sanctity of life, of faith, of our standards, of our country. The list could continue. Many of us talk a really good game, but sometimes when the pressure's on, we don't necessarily walk exactly what we talk. You know, Adam compromised his wife's sin, and they lost paradise. Abraham compromised the truth. Lied about Sarah, nearly lost her. Samson compromised his vow. As a Nazarite, he lost his strength. He lost his ministry. He lost his eyes. He lost his life. Peter compromised his convictions. He lost his joy. There are several, though, who didn't compromise. Moses didn't compromise with Pharaoh. And he did okay. David had real opportunity to kill Saul. He had a lot of opportunity. And there was peer pressure. I mean, his own guys were saying, "You got him. You got him. Kill him. He's right there." And David said what? "He's the Lord's anointed." And he wasn't going to compromise. Paul, in the presence of Felix and Festus and Agrippa, refused to compromise. So it's real, it's threatening. And it's a real tool that can get used against any of us. And so where can we maybe find an example? And for me, one of my favorite examples, and one of my favorite books of the Bible, and I actually had somebody tell me once, "You're not supposed to have a favorite book. It's all God's Word, you're not supposed to have a favorite book." And they said, "You got to get past that." And I said, "Well, I can't help it, you're wrong." And I continued to say that this was one of my favorite books. And that's the book of Daniel. And there are several things that I just want to, it's more of a list tonight that I see just out of Daniel chapter 1. And we're not going to read all 21 verses, but we are going, as we go through the next few minutes, touch on many of the verses. But I really want us to consider some points and some traits of an uncompromising life. And just as some background, and of course many in here may be very familiar with the background. You know, God had warned, there's going to be judgment. If you sin, there's going to be judgment. Just leading up to Israel being taken captive, being overwhelmed by Babylon, Jeremiah, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, they all said, "It's going to happen. It's coming." And so Israel was taken captive around 605 B.C., a couple of other stages in 597 and 586 with the conquering of Jerusalem. Babylon, the Chaldean culture, a pagan country to the worst degree. Idol worship, you name it. It was a horrible, horrible place. And now Israel would be expected to adapt after being exposed to this lifestyle. Nebuchadnezzar, as we kind of go through this in verses 5 through 7, and actually I'm going to back up verse 3 in Daniel 1. It says, "The king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, and he had a plan. He wanted young men in whom there was no blemish, but good looking." I mean, that's how you tell if somebody's worthwhile, right? If they're good looking. Think about our culture. It's the good looking ones. They get all the press. "Gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies, of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time, they might serve before the king. Now, from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them, the chief of the eunuch gave new names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego." So Nebuchadnezzar orders his 3-year training program and prepare some of Israel's finest, and he had some goodies for them. He was going to take care of them. Well, 4 of these guys were very close friends, and those are the ones that we just read about. And they were chosen. Again, they were smart guys. They were, because of their knowledge, good looking, they fit the description. They were given new names. Their original names all related to God. Their new names were primarily gods of the Chaldeans. And we see Daniel just anchored in God. Absolutely anchored in God. Unwilling to compromise. What about us? Are we unwilling to compromise? And, you know, here's, since it is the political season, and I'm not touting one candidate over another, I'm just giving some examples of what I have personally seen and people have asked me. My cousin down in Charlotte, I've had a number of folks come to me, especially when it came out and we got down to the two main candidates. And I had a number of folks say, well, I know one thing, never Trump. And that was a big thing, still is a little bit. Never Trump. And I said, well, and I asked a question. I said, so what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to vote somebody else. I'm not going to vote at all. I said, so you're willing to compromise. And I'm not touting for Trump. That's not it. But their reasoning, I felt, was off base. We didn't argue about it, as I'm prone to say. We didn't argue. We had some robust dialogue, but we didn't argue. Okay, and that's just one example in recent social and political example. Well, the Babylonians had their work cut out for them, too, if you think about it. You take a whole nation captive, and now you got to change them. I could barely get my son potty trained. And now they're taking a whole people, a whole nation. So they had their work cut out for them. And the answer, the strategy, was this three-year training program. And train some young, promising proteges for leadership. And then serve the Babylonian leaders. And Daniel and his buddies were these prime trainees. So they, again, they changed their name, their education, and they tried to change their lifestyle. And that is what they bucked against. That's what Daniel said, you know what, I'm not doing. So let's talk about that. And we see in verse 8, this is a real transition for this story. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs, Ashpenaz, that he might not defile himself. His attitude was so important. And try to picture Daniel making this case. You got this leader, this guy who's in charge of them. And in those days, this guy probably could have just had him put to death. You ain't gonna do this? Fine. So we see Daniel, this bearded old man, standing in front of him, right? Now, every background, everything that I've ever read, these guys were teenagers. It's pretty bold, pretty bold. And I have to look in the mirror sometimes and say, how much boldness do I have? And it's so challenging. And so his age, it's another reason why I like this, is such a good example. And flat out, he was not accepting this lifestyle. And there were future challenges around this. Let him write to a lion's den. Let his buddies write to a fiery furnace. But he said no. And you know, in many ways, if we think about lifestyle, can be more hazardous to our society than a philosophy. You know, sometimes we get really concerned about, well, that's not the philosophy I agree with. While the lifestyle, we just kind of fall in line sometimes. And it's so easy. It's so easy. But there are some real simple things to consider. And in verse 8, the first thing that we have seen here with Daniel is an unashamed boldness. An unashamed boldness in verse 8. He was saying no to the lifestyle. The king's food and drink. Why was he so concerned? Because most of this was devoted to idols. This was all about idols. And consuming them would be honoring them and dishonoring God. And notice, he didn't beat around the bush. Now think about some things maybe you've been faced with and you come up with excuses. He didn't beat around the bush and say, you know, I got a bad stomach. You know, the seasonings bother me. You know, I've had a chronic ulcer since I was 11 years old. I can't eat this stuff. No, he didn't do that. He got right to the point. And he said, I can't eat this stuff. It will defile me. We see that in verse 8. He says, I have a conviction against this. The fear of man was no concern to Daniel. You know, there's a verse over in Psalm 119 that really hits home. He says in verse 46 of Psalm 119, I will speak of your testimonies also before kings and will not be ashamed. Will not be ashamed. He had an unashamed boldness. Fear of man was no concern. So what's our level of boldness? The second thing that we see with Daniel, and again in verse 8, he had an uncommon standard. You know, he talked about he's not going to eat the king's delicacies nor the wine. And this isn't a diatribe against wine and alcohol. Wine was kosher. And it was very common in Israel. There was this mixed wine called Yalion. And people would consume that. And it was very common. And it was okay. Yet wine always has a potential for disaster. And he was not, that was his standard. He said, I'm not going above the standard. What's our standards? He said no to this. He had an uncommon standard. A third thing that he also had was he had an unearthly protection. He had an unearthly protection. In verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill, or the kindness, of the chief of the eunuchs. There is so much power in that verse. God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. He had an unearthly protection. Do we have the confidence to say that? Is our fellowship so tight with our Heavenly Father over anything else that we know for a certainty and we see it in action? We see things happen on our behalf that we wonder, how in the world? And then we finish that with, it's got to be a God thing. There's a God sighting. And I can't tell you how many times it's happened for us. And to live like this, this took a lot of heart, because they could end up taking a lot of heat from men. But God had brought Daniel into the favor. He took the highest ground. He was obedient. How often can we say we find favor with God? You know, sometimes people say, well, you know, aren't you afraid of what people will think? I used to run into that when I was at the bank working. But there's a verse in Proverbs I always liked, still do. Proverbs 16, verse 7. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. What a promise. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. It's one of the most underutilized promises I think that we have. He had an unearthly protection. And it always begs the question, who are we truly depending on? It's one of those things. We talk about yielding. We talk about God and how He is our protector. And we have this unearthly protection. But to what extent, when times get tough, when the heat gets on, how comfortable are we really? And sometimes we get put to that test. And it could be not just a situation, but it could still be memories. It could be remnants of things that have happened to us in the past that sometimes hit us. It could be loneliness. It could be things, you know, walking our dog last night, little 9 pounds of ferocious poodle. She thinks she's so tough. And then she barks and barks and barks at another dog, and then she gets over by him and starts that tap dance very slowly away. And we had just gotten home. We We're grateful that we get to go this week on the Young at Heart trip. Because it won't be anything like yesterday. We drove back and forth to Grand Rapids, Michigan yesterday. A little day trip, a little five-hour drive. And the reason we went, we got on the road at 4:30. We had to be in a parking lot at a football stadium by 9:30. To be at the homecoming football game for the university where Logan just graduated from. He didn't play football. But back in May, in the last game that he played as college lacrosse, they won the national tournament in their division. And so yesterday was the day they chose to honor and recognize the team. And Mama wasn't going to miss that. And neither was Dad. Because it was going to be a 5 or 6 minute event. Hop in the car. So anyway, we got home last night after we had lunch with Logan and his girlfriend. And we headed back and got out of the car after the 5 hours back. And now we're out on our walk. And as we started the walk, Lisa went to say something. She started saying something. She said, "You know, I forgot." And she has hung her head. I said, "You okay?" And she said, "Oh, that's just the dumbest thing." And I said, "What?" She said, "I was getting ready to say what and do something that she always did anytime we traveled. And it hadn't happened for a while. And it just came out." And she said, "I was getting ready to say I forgot to call my mom and tell her we were home." And she caught herself. And I felt horrible for her. And I started thinking of my mom, who went to heaven 6 or 7 months before Roz did in January. And she said, "But you know what? She's so happy right now. But I could see the sadness. But I saw also that smile and that joy that's everlasting. Because Lisa has that unearthly protection." And we never know. She could have gotten really bitter right then. She could have said, "I can't believe this happened," because it was almost a year when it really escalated. She didn't do it. She had a chance right then and there to compromise her faith. But she didn't do it. And I just admire that. So an unearthly protection. The fourth thing. And by the way, in verse 10, this was tough because it says, "The chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. Why should he see your face as looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king.'" That's a real long way of saying, "You don't eat this, this doesn't work out, I'm a dead man." He didn't want to compromise the king. Daniel didn't want to compromise the king. So this guy's in a real pinch. I mean, literally, his head was at stake. And he was afraid that poor health was on the way. And it'd be bad news for them. It'd be bad news for him. But then we see Daniel shows an unhindered persistence. I mean, he could have given in. You know, he could have gone back to his buddies and said, "Look, you know, eat at least one piece extra crispy and a Twinkie. You know, eat something. It's not going to hurt, just a little bit." No. They had pushed enough. And Ashpenaz was at some risk. And Daniel doesn't get arrogant. He doesn't get rebellious. Verse 11, "So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over." So now he's going to the steward, to the chief of the eunuchs, and he says, "Please test your servants for 10 days. and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. And he used a key word in verse 12. Please. Please. And then in verse 12, he says, basically, let's make a deal. This is a 3-year program. I'm only asking for 10 days. His faith was so strong. He was trusting God for a whole life. When you really think about it, what could have happened? What could have happened? He said, it's a 3-year program. I'm only asking for 10 days. And he didn't push, but he didn't give up. He didn't, after the Ashpenaz said, look, my head's on the line, Daniel could have backed off. But no, he just kept with it. Because he had this unhindered persistence. But he was civil. He was nice. He had a relationship with this gentleman. And we don't look at that. He had the ability to talk. The guy, because why? In verse 9, God had brought Daniel into favor. And Daniel was taking advantage of what God had done. And God had rewarded him because Daniel, early on, we saw in verse 8, he purposed in his heart. You see how it all works? And so many times we get lost in the moment and everything and say, wait a minute. And we have to look, you know, yesterday I was driving up and I was driving back. And there were a couple of times where they were doing some road work and I'd get past the road work and I'd check my rearview mirror and then I'd go on. And I do that. I don't know about you, but if I hit a pothole, I'll check the rearview mirror and think, you know what, I'm going to remember where that was. But if I drive looking at the rearview mirror for the whole trip, I'm in real danger. I'm going to wreck. Because the picture is bigger looking through the windshield. But every now and then, we have to look in the rearview mirror. And we have to look in the rearview mirror of our lives and remember all those times God was faithful and not forget when we hit a pothole in life, God got us through it. And it was a pothole compared to eternity. And then we're able to share those experiences with someone else and do what we're all called to do, and that's evangelize. And Daniel had this persistence, and he wasn't about to give up. And the reason he had this, we see in verse 12, after he says, please test your servant for 10 days. In verse 13, then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. Because what we see is he had an unblemished faith. He had an unblemished faith. The veggies, yeah, they were all kosher, and the water. And this is not an advertisement for a vegetarian diet. But he knew. They had experience. And he said, just compare us to the rest. And what we get here, he says in verse 13, let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. In other words, some of the others had said, you know, I'm taking advantage of this. I'm compromising. These weren't the only four in the training program. He said, compare us to them. Some had compromised, but not these four guys. He had an unblemished faith. And he said, after comparing, make a decision, we'll live with it. What a great spiritual lesson. You know, so many times sin produces doubt. Sin produces fear, questioning, apprehension. But righteousness produces confidence and security. You ever notice that? Get off the track a little bit, the doubts creep in. Get a little fearful. Start questioning things. Daniel was saying, I'll put my life on the line. I believe that if I obey God, He will honor that obedience. He had an unblemished faith. So then we see in verses 14 and 15, what God allowed to happen. So he consented with them in this matter, Ashpenaz, and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portions of the king's delicacies. When we are following these practical traits, an unblemished faith will lead us into some unusual tests. It'll lead us into some unusual tests. In the original King James, it said they were fairer and fatter. There weren't four little fat teenagers running around Babylon. That's not what that meant. But they were measured. They saw the strength, the healthiness. And God honored their faith. And as they went through this very unusual test, you ever go through a test in life? I think we all have. God honors our faith. We have an unblemished faith. God allows us to get through some unusual tests. And these unusual tests yield strength. They yielded strength for them physically, but I got to tell you, it had to yield strength for them spiritually and help prepare them for what was next. And there was a lot on the horizon. Now, I always find a little humor in verse 16. I probably take a liberty with this because it says, "Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them the vegetables." What do you do with that? Doggy bag home? I always thought this guy probably ate it and he was probably fairer and fatter in a different way. But they were faced with an unusual test, and they succeeded, and this test was successful. And because of that, we see in verse 17, "And as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." Because they passed this unusual test, they now had unbounded blessing. Unbounded blessing. Daniel even went beyond the Chaldean wisdom. And they were to be, the Chaldean culture was looked at as the best of the best. Daniel went beyond. He gets divine wisdom. He's able to interpret visions and dreams. And the center of knowledge was Babylon. These guys were now the cream of the crop. They had unbounded blessing. When was the last time any of us were saying, "You know what? I have unbounded blessing. I cannot believe what God is doing." You know, Ephesians 3 says he's able to go above and beyond. That's Greg's translation. But he goes above and beyond. Unbounded blessing. You know, the path to virtue in our society, to real virtue, it's not about politics. It's not about great skill at compromising at the right time. It's not about any of that. The path to virtue in our society, I think, is honesty, virtue, integrity, godliness is the foundation. An uncompromising life. The final thing we see is in verse 20 and 21. "And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them." Because in verse 18, we'll back up. In verse 18, at the end of days, when the king had said they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them or talked with them. "And among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus." 10 times better than the best. Politics, social pressure, a number of things all try to master the art of compromise. And our lives will be the same if we don't stand on the promises. It's one of my favorite hymns, "Standing on the Promises." And so many times we get faced with, are we going to stand on the promises, or instead are we going to compromise? What did it yield Daniel? The last thing was unlimited influence. He had unlimited influence. Verse 21, he served until the first year of King Cyrus. If we do some math, it's about 70 years. He had unlimited influence. God is so good. He's so faithful. Daniel became, as it were, the prime minister. And he even negotiated the return to the land. Living an uncompromising life. Where are we? An uncompromising life is lived with unashamed boldness, calls us to an uncommon standard that depends on unearthly protection, built on an unblemished faith that can face unusual testing with an unhindered persistence, resulting in unbounded blessing and unlimited influence. My challenge to me, and I'll just share it with you, dare to be a Daniel. It goes beyond the lion's den. It's all about an uncompromising life. And we have these things in place, the love that we're supposed to exhibit will be so well seen. And we'll open up opportunities to share with others and help them toward a decision that has eternal ramifications, because eternity is an awful long time to be wrong. Let's pray. God, thank you for our time. Thank you for this group. Thank you for everything that you've blessed us with. Thank you that nothing surprises you. Thank you that you've got this. No matter what this may be, you've got things in control. May we never, ever forget that. God, thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the wonderful gift of the cross. Redemption. We can't even fathom what it cost you. But we know that you gave him for us in your mercy and your grace, sparing us judgment. And we have a story to tell for those of us that have believed and have trusted and are so secure. What a wonderful story we have to share. May we do so. Go with us now, I ask, in Jesus' name. Amen.